We've now taken a few weeks to sort out and be inspired by the three most prominent Marys. So now we're going to turn our attention to the Jameses. And right away, we need to just clarify, especially for the Spanish speakers. We'll talk a little bit more about this next week, but just know that James in English evolved from Jacob. Okay, and in Spanish, San Jacobo evolved into Santiago. Doesn't make that much sense, but in English, if a Jacob comes up in the New Testament, they've just translated that as James every time to make it easier. But in Spanish, you will see Jacobo and Santiago, so just know that that's the same name. So while James and Jacob, Santiago and Jacobo refer to the same person, we're still not out of the confusion yet, because there are a ton of Jameses. If you were with us for our last showing of The Chosen, we saw this depicted vividly and humorously. So Jesus was selecting some of his first disciples for the first time, and they realized that two of them are James. So they decide to distinguish them as Big James and Little James. And this is actually historical. Whether it was for age, or the order they were selected, or their size, or maybe all of the above, we have James the Less, or James the Lesser, which sounds kind of mean, but it really just means that he's the little James, or younger. And then we have the James that church history remembers as James the Great, or James the Greater, which sounds very wow, but again, doesn't mean that he's any better than the other guy, just that he's older or bigger. So we have two disciples that are James, and then the third James is known as James the Just. He's actually Jesus' half-brother, and we'll talk about him next week. But today we want to focus on this James, James the Greater. And we're going to see how significant that nickname turns out to be as we look at his life. So the basics, this James was one of the first disciples called by Jesus. He is one of the two sons of Zebedee. So his brother was John, the disciple, the John that wrote the Gospel John. And Dave will talk about him in a couple of weeks. So James, with his brother John and his father Zebedee, owned a fishing business of some success because we're told that they managed other employees. And we're informed that they were fishing associates with the other disciple brothers, Andrew and Peter. Now, if James the Greater didn't already think he was pretty great before Jesus, he started to get more reason to think he's great with Jesus. Because with Peter and John, James was part of Jesus' inner circle of three. You may have noticed that the phrase Peter, James, and John occurs a lot, and this is that James. From what I can tell, being a part of this inner circle of three gave you, number one, the privilege of cool nicknames given by Jesus himself. Together, they were The Rock and the Sons of Thunder. Not a bad band name right there. Alejandro, keep that in mind. And secondly, maybe more significantly, at three different points, these three were selected out of the other 12 to go with Jesus and witness three huge events. And they were told, don't tell anyone about this. Keep this between us. Now, have you ever been invited or included in a group like this? Maybe the cool kids on the playground? Sadly, for many of us, this was just a dream. But if you were to be included in this kind of group, how would you feel if the leader of the cool kids club said to you, hey, come check this out, but keep this a secret. Keep this between us. Don't tell anyone. You feel super important. You're in the know. You know a secret. The secret of the inner circle of this important group. It's like being in on an inside joke. Doesn't that feel great? So the first huge event they got invited into was when Jesus raised a dead girl back to life. So everyone was grieving, and Jesus only let in Peter, James, and John. After he raised her to life, of course, everybody was astonished, and he told them, don't let anyone know about this. Then the second huge event was when Jesus took Peter, James, and John up a high mountain, and Jesus was transfigured or transformed before their very eyes. His face shone like the sun. This was an exclusive sneak peek into his coming kingdom. This was a secret reveal of his glorious, powerful, divine nature. And when they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, don't tell anyone what you've seen until the Son of Man, Jesus, has been raised from the dead. This is a huge deal. At this point, James has to be feeling pretty great. He's in the inner circle of the Messiah, who he assumes has come to lead them to conquer the Romans and establish his kingdom on earth now. But Jesus has been teaching them to follow him, which includes occasionally giving them power to even do miracles. So James was feeling so great that he and his brother went to Jesus with confidence to make two audacious requests, two big asks. Ask number one, the power ask. After a village rejects Jesus, they ask him, Jesus, what do you say? Shall we call down fire from heaven on them? Imagine how great and powerful you must think you've become to let the God-man know you can call down fire from heaven if he'd like. And Jesus said, no, thank you. Thanks so much for the offer. Ask number two, the glory ask. James and John embarrassingly bring their mother along and they ask, Jesus, what do you say? Should we just make this thing official? Shall we just be named the greatest in your kingdom? We can sit on either side of your throne. Imagine how great and glorious you must think you've become to let the King of Kings know you're happy to be named number two. Jesus is like, yeah, you don't really know what you're asking. Careful what you wish for. You will be great, but you should probably know what I mean when I use the term. But as great as James the Greater has seemed, when I was looking into this, I realized for someone who's in the inner circle of three, he certainly doesn't get much press. I mean, compared to the other two in the trio, of course, Peter has a lot of scenes and a lot of lines, probably too many. And John gets lots of scenes and lots of lines. Not to mention his gospel and the three letters. James doesn't get any of his own scenes. He doesn't even get any of his own lines. The best James can get is Peter, James, and John did this. And James and John said this. There's actually only one time that James gets his own space without Peter and without John. And it's in Acts 12. Finally. But here's what it says. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. James was the first apostle to be martyred. Just 10 years into this mission to bring the good news of Jesus out to the world. That's his only solo moment, his last. This is James the Greater. I mean, based on this, it's hard to see him as the greatest James, let alone the greatest among the apostles. I mean, even James the Lesser, who gets no press at all, at least he outlives this James and therefore had a longer ministry. And the James that everyone really knows and remembers wasn't even a faithful follower of Jesus during his ministry. Like, he didn't believe until after the resurrection, and yet here he is. He becomes the great leader of the Jerusalem church, the moderator of the first great council, and the writer of one of the most influential New Testament letters. Honestly, ironically, this James the brother ends up kind of replacing James the Greater as the third pillar of the early church. If that doesn't really seem fair, just look at James's lot or fate compared to the other two in the inner circle of three. We already noticed that he didn't get much airtime, but while James was the first disciple to be martyred, his brother John would be the last disciple to die. So he got to see the advance of the gospel, and God even miraculously chose to show John his great revelation of things to come. And here's something puzzling. In Acts 12, where it says James was arrested by Herod and killed pretty much right away, it says, when Herod saw that that was pleasing to some people, he proceeded to seize Peter as well. But if you go on reading in that chapter, you see that an angel miraculously broke Peter out of prison. It just makes me wonder, why did God intervene miraculously to free Peter and yet allow James to die? Why did James die so early into the mission when John lived a long life and even got to miraculously see into God's plans? Maybe you have had a similar comparative thought. Why did God make it so easy for that person? Why did they get to be married? Why do I have to be married? Why is that person healed or happy when I struggle and suffer? When we look at the cards that we've been dealt, if we could, we might ask Jesus, but what about them? Everybody's story is different. Everybody's lot in life is different. Everybody's blessings and challenges are different. One person might have this challenge, but not the other. And maybe measured by number or weight, one person has more challenge than the other. But no one, even if they look like they have it all together, no one is without struggles. And in fact, often it's the person that looks the best, that looks like they have a problem-free life, that really has some deep emotional pain, some family turmoil, some private medical burden. This fallen world is unjust and uneven. Jesus knows that personally. Jesus knows what it's like to be a man acquainted with grief, a man of sorrows, a man of loneliness. He knows what it's like to be tempted, and he's a God that does intervene to help and heal and liberate. But he also promises that in this life, we will have much trouble in general, but especially if we choose to follow him and identify with him. He does promise to be present with us and to teach us to depend on him for our strength and endurance as we wait for him to complete his ultimate promise of coming back and setting all things right and providing full satisfaction for our deepest needs. This is a promise that we have evidence to trust because of what he's done already. But Jesus told James and John, you will experience suffering and death for my sake. And he told Peter the kind of death by which he would glorify God. Then Jesus said to him, follow me. Then Peter turned and saw John and said, Lord, what about him? What about him? And Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You just follow me. You follow me. Jesus' challenge to Peter, to James, to the other disciples is for you and me. Whatever your lot in life, just try to be truly faithful. Whatever your lot in life, seek to be truly faithful. Your reward will be great. So fight comparison. Live your story God's way. And be willing to let him be God, to let him be in control. Jesus' kingdom principle includes, to whom much is given, much is required. And he also communicates that the other way around is true. To whom much is required, much will be given. Now, as we reflect on James's only solo moment, his final moment in Acts 12, you actually could argue that this really was James the Greater's greatest moment. The one who might argue that is Jesus. Because one of the most repeated things Jesus did with his time with his disciples was to try to drill it into their heads that in his kingdom, greatness is redefined. So let's go back to when James and his brother are requesting the highest places of greatness in Christ's kingdom. I'm going to read from Mark chapter 10, verses 35 through 45. If you want to look it up on your own, you can. Mark 10, 35 through 45. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked. They replied, let one of us sit on your right and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you're asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they've been prepared. But when the other 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. So Jesus called them together and said, listen, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the nations lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man, Jesus, did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. In the Gospels, I counted at least 7 different times that it's recorded that the disciples are arguing over who is the greatest, and always at the most inappropriate times. And each time, Jesus repeated his kingdom reality. The greatest among you will be your servant. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Those who humble themselves will be exalted. Whoever wants to be first must be last. And the one who is least among you is actually the greatest. Jesus' challenge to James and the disciples is for you and me. Whatever your lot in life, seek true greatness. True greatness, which means fight pride. Live with humility. Be willing to serve. So the first level of Jesus' upside-down kingdom ground rules is that great leadership that God approves of and rewards is actually humble servant leadership. That is countercultural in any century. That is a hard enough paradigm shift, but it gets deeper. The second level to the upside-down kingdom ground rules is to follow Christ's example of humility and service to the point of giving his own life. Here in Jesus' reply to James and his brother, he asks if they are willing and able to drink the cup that he will drink. And they said confidently, absolutely. And Jesus affirms, you indeed will drink from this cup. The cup symbolizes suffering, and baptism symbolizes death. You may recognize this cup from Jesus' agonizing prayer before his arrest and execution. He said, Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. By the way, that's the third and final huge event that the inner circle of three is invited to, although they were asleep for most of it. Jesus' agony in the garden and his arrest. Jesus told James that the reason he came was not just to serve, but actually to give his life as a ransom for many. And we're told we're supposed to follow his example, Christ's example, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking on the very nature of a servant. He then humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. And this was not the end. It was just the beginning, because therefore God resurrected him and exalted him. That's Jesus modeling his upside down challenge and reward for those who want to follow him. Jesus said to his disciples, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, so like be willing to die and follow me. Whoever loses their life will find it. Whoever loses their life will find true life. You may remember in the Beatitudes that we studied a couple months ago, Jesus actually said, blessed, happy, joyful, are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me? Rejoice and be glad. Why? Because great is your reward in heaven. Jesus says to James and his brother, you want to be great? You want to share my greatness? You want your reward to be great? You should know what that means and what it requires. Follow me on the path to greatness, but just know that along the road to greatness, we're going to pass through suffering and death. I'm not going to my throne right now. I'm going to the cross. I'm not here to conquer the Romans enslaving you. I'm actually here to conquer the very sin and death that has enslaved the entire human race since the beginning. I'm paying the ransom, the price for everyone's freedom, if they'll just humble themselves to accept it and follow me. So this paradoxically makes choosing discipleship both the easiest decision ever and the hardest decision ever. Because it's free, and yet following him may cost us everything in this life. Are we able? Are we willing? Whether James knew what he was saying or not, at the time, he said absolutely. Ended up being the case. This is tough. Are we willing to follow Christ even if it means alienation from our friends? Are we willing to follow Christ even if it means hostility from our family? Many of you can nod your heads because this is your reality. Are we willing to follow Christ even if it means losing our reputation, our job? Are we willing to follow Christ even if it means having our voice censored or our bank account frozen? Are we willing to follow Christ even if it means giving up our life? In many places, these costs are a reality. Now, we want to be careful not to act like actual physical persecution is the same or comparable to anything less, but this is the best way we can apply what we learn from James to our lives, wherever we are. And remember, times do change, so are we ready? Are we ready? Jesus doesn't mean that these things will happen to us, but he calls his followers to be willing to suffer loss in this temporary life, which generates eternal glory. So true faithfulness leads to true greatness and true life. Jesus' challenge to James and the disciples is for you and me. Whatever your line in life, seek true life, which means let's fight against despair. Let's take the challenge of trying to live with joy, being willing to give it all. In this sense, James really can be said to be great. While he struggled at first with this, he eventually learned. Whatever his lot, he sought to be truly faithful, to live his story God's way. He sought to have true greatness, to live with humility and to serve. And he sought true life with joy, willingly giving it all. For the joy set before Christ, he was able to endure the cross. So for the joy set before us, we can endure any hardship. So we can join the grieving hymn writer in singing, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul.